It's cords everywhere. Welcome to Open Sources Guelph here on CFRU 93.3 FM, CFRU.ca, Guelph Campus and Community Radio. I am Adam A. Donaldson of Guelph Politico, and joining me is...
Scotty Hertz untangling the cords, trying to do a gold medal job of it, but I think it's more like a chocolate medal at this rate, but...
No Olympic jokes.
No. That's all we're going to say about the Olympics. I don't think we're even...
No Olympic jokes.
That's all I got. All is right. That a joke? No, it's a gold medal performance.
No Olympic analogies.
Okay.
Leave that to corporate media.
Good point. And that's a point to Adam A. Donaldson.
Open Source CFRU's use political and current affairs discussion show, and you can listen to us live here on CFRU every Thursday at 5 p.m. You can also listen to us live online. Go to CFRU.ca and click on the Listen Now icon at the top right-hand corner of your screen, and you can listen to us anytime by downloading the Open Sources podcast on Podbean, iTunes, Stitcher, and Google Play. Today, we are heading back to that wretched hive of scum and villainy called the White House, where two staffers were fired because of domestic abuse allegations and a third quit because he just can't get a permanent security clearance. And all that was before another school shooting in the state. So we'll talk about non-shooting matters in Washington. And then Patrick Brown's trying to do some career rehab of his own. One of the accusers has slightly changed her story, so Brown feels like this is his chance to claim some lost ground. Is anyone willing to listen now? And then finally, executives from Facebook, Google, and Twitter were shown what accountability looks like when they had to face the scary UK MP committee that came to Washington to talk to them. How did that go? We will talk about that. But first, it was almost a week ago that the verdict in the trial of Gerald Stanley came down. He was the Saskatchewan farmer who shot and killed Colton Bushy, a young First Nations man of the Cree Nation who was out with his friends, and they got a flat tire, and depending on who and what you believe, they were either going to rob Mr. Stanley and he had to retaliate with self-defense, or they were trying to get some assistance, in which case a white farmer willfully and with malice shot and killed a young First Nations man.
With his crappy Soviet 65-year-old pistol that supposedly misfired. Which is garbage. I guess we don't need to really get into the mechanics of what happened, but I personally find this story very hard to believe, and you'll read lots of commentary from all journalism pipes these days that the story is pretty bogus.
Well, apparently they tried to recreate the malfunction mm-hmm. with the gun, and it didn't.
I think we talked about this before. I've had gun training.
Yeah.
Twice. And it's not plausible at all.
Okay.
What happened? So, and there is no argument that that Stanley did kill Colton Bushy. But of course, none of this will bring Colton Bushy back. And some unprecedented things have happened. I've never heard of the Prime Minister sending condolences to the family of a victim in an instance like this, but also the fact that the guy was not guilty. So he's not guilty, but in a lot of ways he's guilty. It's a really, really strange situation. But of course, it's set all of this stuff into motion that's been evolving over the past few days in terms of the Colton Bushy's family speaking to the Justice Minister and the two Ministers of Indigenous Affairs. That department split, right?
Mm-hmm.
I can't remember the name of the new departments, but it was cleaved into two, right?
Yep.
Indigenous and Crown Affairs and Indigenous Services, Philpott and Bennett. Anyway, so there's been lots of... they've had a lot of access to Parliament Hill. And then, of course, it was announced that... what was the actual announcement? That they were going to rethink the fundamental Indigenous rights and title and work with Indigenous people.
Basically.
And it sounded like... they made it sound like for the first time they were going to enforce Section 35 of the Constitution. It's kind of like it's just sitting there latent.
Right.
Here are the Indigenous rights of the people in this country. But
because the only people who kind of like say this is a law and it should be enforced is the Supreme Court. The Supreme Court has used that for the basis of a number of cases.
Yes.
But apparently when it was like drafted, it was kind of like more of a guideline than a rule, to borrow a phrase, and that was kind of the intention. Mm-hmm. But the Supreme Court decided to take it literally. So if the government decides to take it more literally, then that would be a tremendous step forward.
I think Jody Wilson-Raybould's exact words were operationalize. So I guess that means it's going to become, yeah, it sounds like we're going to, you know, activate it, even if it's been sitting latent for well over 30 years, 35 years, along with the Constitution, 82. Comment in The Guardian was interesting because they spoke about Justin Trudeau speaking in Parliament. To me, it sounds like that this may have been in the pipe already. There's no way that you come up with policy like that in just a few days after a verdict. I think maybe they had it sitting on the back burner saying, yeah, we're going to do this, and now is the time to roll it out and also make it look like action is happening. Guardian made a good point, though. They said he did not provide any details. So it's like, we are going to strive. It's that language where it's kind of, we're going to strive to, or we're going to work toward, right? It's not, we are going to do this. It's the whole, it's kind of couched in that.
Well, we're going to do this.
Yeah, we're going to talk to people.
Yeah, we talked a few weeks ago about that Supreme Court case that's going forward now about when the Harper government passes omnibus bills that change, you know, several acts all at once, and whether or not they violated the spirit of the Constitution in terms of coordinating with indigenous groups and indigenous governments on a nation-to-nation basis. And, you know, to my knowledge, that is a fight that is still being fought in the Supreme Court. We're waiting a Supreme Court decision on that. So, you know, I think step one might have been like, okay, you're right, we're going to withdraw our, what we're doing. We're fighting that. We're going to withdraw our fight. And work with you on that now. That's now policy. We don't need the Supreme Court to rule on this, because I think it's pretty clear the Supreme Court is probably going to rule the First Nations way on that if they follow precedent. But you're right. I mean, there's still a lot of, I think, understandable concern that this is good talk to make good headlines while, you know, people are protesting what happened. And once, you know, the protests stop and everybody goes back to business as usual or unusual, then so can the government. So,
yeah, I think Trudeau's exact words were foster the spirit of self-governance. Fostering the spirit is not doing it. But it sounds like, in terms of consultations, and this is unprecedented, rather than bash these things out in the courts and then the Supreme Court siding with Indigenous people generally, it sounds like they're going to have some kind of consultation process before that, which will eliminate the example that was given was the government spending thousands and thousands of dollars to fight a girl's orthodontal bill. It was somewhere upwards in the range of $100,000, I believe, when it all wrapped up, and this girl had $6,000 with the dental work. I know that sounds like that's a small example compared to what happened with Colton Bushy, but the process is the same. There's this, and it doesn't matter who is the government, liberal, conservative, they fight it because they don't want a precedent set, right? They don't want to say, well, we're paying for this, right? They want to sort it out before it gets to that level. And I sure hope that that happens. And I think most people do, considering what has gone on. I mean, obviously not just the events of the past week, but this is not new. This is not new at all. Saskatchewan is the second highest Indigenous population in Canada. I believe it's Manitoba, then Saskatchewan. So obviously it's something like 150,000 people, I believe. But again, all of this in the news now is not new, but it's time to get it in gear. And I really do hope this happens. I mean, you know, talk is fostering spirit is one thing, but unless they make the concrete changes, it was Bushy's family, but it was his cousin was talking about she kept using the word systemic issues. And that's true. This is built in from day one, probably from, you know, settler culture versus Indigenous culture. And I guess it was part of the campaign of the Liberals this was like very much on the front burner that they were going to sort this one out. As to whether they will, it remains to be seen.
Well, one of the things people have been talking about is this use of this term rural crime, which people understand is kind of a dog whistle, that when you talk about real crime, you're really talking about you know, First Nations youth doing that crime. And there's been an awful lot of there's been a lot of attempt to try to explain the situation in rural Saskatchewan, that apparently there is a lot of theft, property theft, other things, you know. One person who is this Ryan person whose CBC is sort of protecting his identity. He has this Facebook group called Farmers with Firearms.
Oh.
Who basically said...
Ryan X. Yeah.
Who said, you know, if it's not nailed down, it's gone, whether that's like snowmobiles, ATVs, different things.
Sure, but I mean, these days that's as true in Guelph if you own a bicycle, you know, but I understand
that.
But
well, absolutely, but the fact of the matter is that the RCMP's own statistics say that crime is actually going down. Break-and-enters have decreased by 13%. This is year over year, so it's not exactly a trend yet. Thefts have gone down by 2%. Crime, just general crime, is down 5%. But no matter how you feel about your stuff getting stolen, I think the underlying thread that is getting missed is that there definitely seems to be, in places in this country, a feeling that First Nations lives are less than. And this goes back to the case of Barbara Kentner in Northern Ontario, who died after somebody threw a trailer hitch at her from a moving vehicle.
Yes.
And she didn't just die on impact. She died slowly and painfully over 4 or 5 months. You know, and there were articles from the CBC covering that, that, you know, this is apparently a thing that, you know, that for a lot of First Nations people, not having a lot of money, will walk everywhere.
Oh, absolutely.
Where public transit isn't available. So, you know, as they're walking around, people who can afford automobiles are driving down the street, throwing stuff at them like it's some kind of game. So clearly, there is a feeling amongst some white Canadians that Indigenous lives are not equal to the lives of white Canadians. And I think this is... the Stanley case is a case of that. I mean, he's a successful farmer living in Saskatchewan. These are people who, you know, are just takers, you know, this whole takers and makers dynamic. So, you know, of course he can feel free to shoot his gun in the air and shoot at people and not care if it, you know, it hits anyone. The fact of the matter is, it isn't the fact that he was protecting his property. There are any number of steps between somebody trying to steal something from your property and shooting somebody in the head at almost point blank range. There are several steps in between. But there's something about this situation that must have made Joe Stanley feel pretty comfortable waving his gun around at four First Nations youths that he probably wouldn't have done in a similar situation with four white youths.
Too many cowboy and Indian movies, among other things. No, but that's the approach. I mean, farmer, granted, probably has a shotgun, rifle, whatever. Nobody needs a Tokarev pistol. You don't need it.
Yeah.
And also, like, the ammo was really, really old. So why do you have this thing lying around? Is it just for laughs? You just like take pot shots at cans or something? No, you're not. You're shooting it supposedly in the name of security. And one of the stories sort of memeish that's making the rounds was that like one of the biggest property heists and the guy got busted and was a white guy, like $1.5 million of farm equipment.
Mm-hmm.
I used to work in the agricultural department here. We were like, you'd leave stuff in fields and that because you just, the distances are too great. And there was always the concern that things would disappear. Fortunately, we did all right here. But, you know, when it's like thousands and thousands of acres, things walk away. And, you know, that's an example of something like, well, it's not just, you know, it doesn't even matter in this instance with Bushy and his friends, I guess, in the SEV. But if that's really the defense, it's pretty sad. I sure hope this gets appealed.
Oh, and
I really hope it gets appealed and just goes...
And on top of it,
to the Supreme Court.
If Stanley himself is not racist, then certainly a lot of the people who have his back are, because there's the GoFundMe page where he raised like $41,000 in one day, and a lot of people were leaving donations in the name of, you know, First Nations heroes and well-known First Nations people, which is just a blatantly sort of racist rub your face in it.
Troll.
It's trolling. That's exactly right. So there may be legitimate concerns, and Stanley may have had a legitimate reason to want to protect his property with a gun. I don't personally agree with that, but I don't live in rural Saskatchewan, so I can't cast judgment on just the idea. But yeah, there was something that he felt perfectly good waving a gun around at four Indigenous youths.
Oh, yeah.
And that is not acceptable. And if you feel systemic very strongly issue. About this, systemic, mm-hmm. that's right. Yep. If you feel very strongly about this, there is going to be a demonstration here in Guelph in support of First Nations and the Bushy family. It is at Market Square at 1 p.m. And if you are someone who identifies as Indigenous, I know they are also looking for speakers who maybe want to volunteer and talk to their concerns and their experiences. And there is a Facebook page for that. I can't remember its exact title, but I'm sure if you search Colton Bushy Guelph, you'll find it quite easily enough. Yeah. Okay, so let's talk about Trump.
He's back. He never went away.
He never went away.
He never went away.
We can ignore him for a couple of weeks, but I mean, this is particularly concerning because it ticks a couple of boxes. First of all, here we have Donald Trump again supporting people who abuse women and assault women. And they're right there in the White House. And on top of that, there's kind of the bigger national security picture, which is that this man, Rob Porter, who is the staff secretary, who, if you don't understand how the White House works, I don't blame you, because I almost don't understand how the White House works. But traditionally, the staff secretary...
I'm the only one that understands how the White House works.
No one knew it was this complicated. But the staff secretary is the person who receives like every piece of information that it makes its way onto the president's desk, and it's up to him to sort of vet it and decide what gets the priority, whether that's intelligence, whether that's background information for legislation, what have you. So he deals with, or she, whoever the staff secretary is, deals with a lot of complicated and scary secrets. And the reason you don't want a wife beater in this position is because you don't want someone who is compromisable, someone who can be blackmailed in this position. And apparently, there's a White House full of these people.
It would seem so. I'm working on Fire and Fury. He hasn't made an appearance yet, but I'm sure I'm just in. But it's like, the more I read of that, it's like, yeah. So it would seem Chief of Staff John Kelly's handled these allegations very, very poorly. And this is, he has sort of risen to the top in terms of the story beyond the Porter, in terms of, you know, just what the heck's going on in the White House. Kellyanne Conway doing the rounds in the media, and she's like saying about General Kelly, well, you'll have to ask him the question squarely as to whether he knew or anything. She does that sort of, it's almost genius the way she does that circuitous kind of like, I'm not going to answer the question. You should ask him about that because I have no idea. But
she'll go to an entirely other direction. Like,
yeah.
Why don't you ask how many women have gotten jobs under President Trump's economy?
That's very good. We need to take this show on the road.
That's almost a verbatim quote that she did on one of the Sunday shows.
Oh, but, boy.
Yeah. She's Surprise. A class act.
Yeah. Very interesting stuff, but scary at the same time. There's lots of things getting overshadowed. Politico called it the personality-focused West Wing dramas are overshadowing the Republican plan and what they're trying to do.
Oh, yeah, it was Infrastructure Week again. I forgot.
Yes, it was Infrastructure Week, so it's like, we're going to build roads, we're going to build bridges, we're going to build infrastructure. And, of course, tax reform as well. It's all being kind of overshadowed by all the stuff that's going on. And, you know, when you say that stuff like the personality-focused drama, it made me think of House of Cards right away, which in some ways this is very much like House of Cards, right? It's like, Trump, of course, hitting Twitter. He's like, you know, we do all these positive things, but the fake news is negative over and over again. You know, it's like, yeah, it's not fake news for one thing, but well, he keeps doing the thing. What was he? He did this sort of like, there's some things are true, some are false, some are old, right. Some are new. It's like, right. Thanks, Dr. Seuss. I'm all over that. Like, just put the phone down, man.
Well, I mean, that came
some
after
are good, some are bad.
That came after the Friday thing where he's like, we definitely wish him well. He's got a great career ahead of him, and we definitely wish him well. He's a great guy. I would love to see what the faces are of the people behind the camera who are listening to this. Because, of course, he didn't address the accusers. He didn't address domestic violence. He didn't address the fact that this guy was in the White House under provisional security clearances that you're supposed to have for, like, basically a couple of months until you get your full clearance. Because
hasn't it come out that, like, lots of them are on provisional clearance? Like, lots of the temps?
According to NBC News, there are 130 people in the administration that have conditional security. 85 of them are in the White House, the Vice President's office, and on the National Security Council, which is exactly where you want people who don't have permanent security clearance. And then 50 other people work for like various offices tied to the White House, like the National Economic Council and the Office of Management and things. So,
Pretty sure Al-Qaeda reads the news there, White House. You know, like, they're going to know.
Yeah, it's so stupid.
It's like why they would, if after 9/11, it was like, well, if I was a terrorist, I would do that. And it's like, no, don't give them any ideas. So it's like, no one has security clearance. Oh, well.
Well, and that goes right up to the right-hand man, Jared Kushner. He doesn't have a security clearance. And there's reports.
Oh, but we know him, right? No. Well, yeah, he's okay. But in the old days, he used to wave people on. There's that story about Saturday Night Live people going. It was like John Belushi. It's like, oh, it's okay. We know who he is. Let him in.
Ah, we know Saturday Night Live, not the White House.
No, I know, but I mean, but even back then, you're supposed to have your ID, right? Now it's like, I thought they would have, like, you know, fingerprints and eye scans and stuff. It's like, no, it's Kushner. He's okay.
It does remind me of an old news radio where the two the guys at the security desk of the building where the radio station's at are like screwing around with Phil Hartman and not letting him up because he's forgotten his ID.
Come on, guys. Yeah, you can just hear the voice.
That was pretty. That's a classic one.
Oh, boy.
Where were we talking about?
White House security.
But Kushner. It was revealed this week, and even in the midst of all this news about what's going on with the shooting in Florida and who should have guns and all that debate again, apparently the IRS has been investigating the Kushners for over a year.
Oh.
They've been asking for information from people who have invested with them, people who do business with them. And this is separate and apart from the Mueller investigation and any other investigation that's going on in this White House. So if you're thinking about people who have been at the White House for over a year and still don't have a security clearance and maybe why that is, you know, could it be that the IRS is investigating the man who's in charge of Mideast peace? You know, maybe that's why he doesn't have security clearance yet. And by the way, Jared Kushner also getting the presidential daily brief every day, along with like 15 other people in the White House, including the president, who just doesn't read it at all, which is another revelation that came out this week. He doesn't read the
brief. Not a good reader. Just tell me, give me the bullet points. Like, you can just picture this conversation. But yeah, that's the thing, and they're wondering where the leaks come from. I mean, it's like, we got to get the leaks. We got to take out the leaks. It's like, it's just going to leak like a sieve unless you tighten it up. But I mean, that's the thing, is that half of the majority of the people there was no team existed before Trump came in. So it's like, you have to get all these temps, and you got all these people in that you think might know something. Or I think Trump personally, like, will see somebody and say, he's okay, but he's...
Well, that's what happened. That's how Mnuchin became Treasury Secretary.
Yeah, exactly. That's how I know Mnuchin. Yeah.
But, you're right, because most of the people in the White House are people who have never held government positions before. And I think that was one of the explanations why this may be taking so long, is because of, when people join a White House, they have had some capacity of government service before. So there's been some level of vetting before. There's a paper trail that's easy to follow for the FBI or whoever to pick up on. And the reason this is maybe taking a bit longer is because... you know, you have people like Jared Kushner has to revise his statements like several different times. There's this the other staffer who left for, who was on the National Economic Council. His name was George David Banks. Apparently, he left because he couldn't get a security clearance. But the reason he couldn't get a security clearance is because he had once smoked a J and lied about it. He didn't offer full disclosure when he did that, so he was refused security clearance. Now, you may think, well, if we're going to stop people from serving in the White House who may have used marijuana recreationally in the past, he's not going to leave out an awful lot of maybe qualified people, and you would be right. And I was listening to an episode of Pod Save America, and they had one of the former Obama staffers on there right there on a recent episode, and she said, yeah, you know what, when I did my clearances, I copped up, said I had smoked in marijuana in college on a couple of occasions, and it was problematic because, you know, anything, you know, because you're technically breaking the law. But what they did was she was given the clearance after, you know,
the vetting.
After the vetting and after saying she'd have
blood
to do
test probably.
She'd have to do drug tests for a year. So it's not a stumbling block. What gets you is not the crime, but the cover up. If this guy, George Banks, had just been honest and said, yeah, I smoked a J once, and, you know, he'd have to pee in a cup like once a month for
but
a year.
But he didn't inhale. Huh?
Maybe. But
well, I'm sure somewhere in the tunnels at the White House, it's like, there's a little ashtray with all the stuff in it.
Well, I mean,
they're probably more worried about tobacco.
The point
now,
being is, it's not the end of the world if you smoke marijuana and you can't get your security clearance. The problem is that all these people are trying to outthink the system, and it's like it's not there. You know, they're not trying to tag you. They're trying to make sure that they know possibly everything about you, so that they know that Johnny ISIS is not going to come up to you and play on this information for you to give them secure information.
Yeah, we have pictures of Doug Ford selling you hash. No, sorry.
Next topic.
Yeah, that's right. I'm a topic head.
Save it for the next topic.
Yeah. And just getting back to Porter for a minute, Rob Porter.
Yeah.
The thing about the story is, like, as soon as you Google it, the first thing that comes up is that black eye photo. Like, just scores and scores of that repeated over and over was the black eye photo. And it turns out that it would seem as of today she's not anymore, but Hope Hicks, the communications director, was dating this guy. And there was this sort of reveal on the news. One of the ex-wives, Jenny Willoughby, was like, he will be abusive, so look out. Mm-hmm. That's interesting because he probably has a few years on her. I don't want to turn this into e-talk or something, but it's just this weird, I guess, in these situations when you're just embedded, let's say, in the administration, that there's very... you know, few options for you, I guess, in terms of relationships, but...
I don't want to turn this into e-talk either after years of Mulroney bashing on Twitter.
Yeah.
But, you're right. I mean, she's... Poor Hope Hicks has, like, the most terrible taste in men because she also dated Corey Lewandowski. But, but yeah, I did find that interesting that the ex-wife, one of the ex-wives apparently did come forward because after hearing Hope Hicks was dating him. And, of course, she's... You know, she seems to be sinking into these scandals of her own making by being involved with crafting the response to the Porter firing, being involved with crafting the response to the Donald Jr. email.
Yeah, it's weird. She has to do this, you know, she's involved with them. I mean, that's the point I was trying to get at. Well, and all the while, like, you need to put a spin on a guy that you were seeing.
Right.
And now it would seem as of, like, not long ago, not seeing. But,
and all the while, though, too... She is one of the most senior people in the White House and doesn't really have a public profile. I mean, there are so many people in the White House who just don't have public profiles, and Jared Kushner is definitely one of them. You don't see Jared Kushner turn up on Sunday shows.
No.
You don't see Hope Hicks turn up on Sunday shows.
No. Because the only thing I knew about her was that when you look her up, she was a model.
Yeah.
Like...
She was on the cover of some Gossip Girl books.
Yeah, I mean, maybe the head... really? Is that true?
Or, yeah.
Oh, and like Fabio on the romance ones, right? The gossip.
Yes, she's the Fabio
she's
of
the
Gossip Girl.
Fabio of Gossip Girl.
That's right.
She's on a couple Harlequin romances as well. I don't know. Not to diminish that because people do that for their living or whatever, but just in terms of having the communications director of the White House of, like, the, you know, the United States of America. Yeah, I was against Scaramucci, then we'll get Horvath, so we'll get whoever.
Well, that's to say nothing about Omarosa. Now,
yeah, his big brother. She's spilling a bit now, eh? I guess we'll get to that.
We'll save that for another day.
I want to hear the spill.
What?
Omarosa, spill the gossip.
All right, let's go to commercial.
You're listening to Sea Talk Daily with Donald A. Donaldson and Scotty McScottington.
About e-talk,
yes.
Ever.
Speaking of talk, it's
yes, we're going to talk about something involving Ben Mulrooney's sister and other things. Coming up after the break, you're listening to Open Sources here on CFRU 93.3 FM, CFRU.ca, Guelph Campus and Community Radio.
Relocation, damnation, misinformation, summation, our nation still strong. What have you heard in your short, long life? When did they silence your voice? The stories they spun made you swallow your tongue, made you feel like it was your choice. Yeah, yeah, yeah.
New to the station from our Indigenous selection, that was Quantum Tangle from their album Shelter As We Go, released, I think, late last year. And that song was called Tiny Hands, an Indigenous band from, I believe, the north somewhere. Didn't get to read the bio on the way home, but it certainly looks like they are Inuk. So, nice CD. Good CD. Mm-hmm. I managed to listen to most of it today, so it was all right.
Good.
Check them out.
If you're listening to our show, you probably weren't watching the PC leadership debate. And this breaking news from the PC leadership debate, Jonathan Goldsby from the Canada Land posted this on Twitter. According to PC leadership candidate Tanya Granick-Allen, she declared, quote, "I have yet to meet a parent who is comfortable with anal sex in the classroom."
That's a direct quote, that folks. You can't make this stuff up.
You can't make this up because...
No.
And she's the latest
choose your words
candidate.
Carefully.
Yes. In the race. No. Mostly running on a platform of I don't like sex education, which I find bizarre. And I was thinking about this, and we'll get to Patrick Brown in a sec, but I was thinking about this. One of the things in the new curriculum is about teaching kids to understand consent, to understand harassment, to understand assault, and to be able to explain that to a parent or a teacher or a guardian or whatever. That, you know, when somebody abuses you, it gives you the tools that you're able to express this and able to tell someone. Now we have this PC leadership race, which started because of allegations of assault and harassment and abuse on the part of the leader. And we have half the people in this leadership race running on some kind of platform of this new curriculum that gives you the tools to understand assault and harassment better, or help kids understand assault and harassment better. It has to go. I just wanted to make that point.
Very, very good point. And yeah, it's, Doug Ford seems to have jumped on this, I guess, a bandwagon of sorts. I guess it's to sort of not even placate. I don't know what the word is for the, you know, to get the more of the right, fundamentalist right, I guess, to encourage them to vote for him by saying, no, sex ed, whatever. Looking forward to seeing the debate. It's going to be replayed tonight at 8, I believe, on TVO and also on the TVO's Facebook page. I guess we can advertise for another public broadcaster, I suppose, but
sure.
Are you watching it? Of course you are. We're gonna watch it. I pick it apart.
I might watch it.
I'm gonna give it a go. It sounds like it's interesting. I'm very intrigued to see this new person. I wouldn't say excited, but wasn't there a whole party stop the new sex ed agenda party the last election? Was that it's an actual registered party? Maybe they're
didn't
even
run
more,
anybody here.
Maybe they're even more extreme than the people within the PCs that seem to be against this.
All I know about these people who are, you know, so angry about the sex ed curriculum is that talking to the ones here, the Campaign for Life people, they couldn't tell you what was in the old sex curriculum, the old sex ed curriculum. let alone tell you accurately what's in the new one.
It's probably exactly the same.
All they know
my
is
day.
Like what the talking points that they've heard from like people that are in the community about, again, teaching anal sex in the classroom and other things. And it's, you know, they really don't understand the situation, nor do they care to understand, which is, again, problematic when you're when you're in the middle of a leadership race because the leader was thrown out because of abuse and assault allegations, to then turn around and say, you know what, we are going to die on this hill about, you know, sex education. It's just bizarre.
Just take your kid out if you don't want to go to it in the end, right? Like,
well, don't take your kid out. I mean,
no. I mean, if this woman feels that strongly, it's like, it's almost a completely different topic, but it's like, you're a one-note wonder. There's way more to being the leader of the PCs, regardless of your politics.
Grow up.
Well, that too. But she obviously managed to rustle loose $100,000 somehow and enough signatures to get her done, so she must have enough backing for that.
Well, I mean, these people have all the money in the world. Look at the Garden of Grace.
Yeah.
Which is privately funded and privately fundraised.
Yeah. We're totally off another topic, but
yeah, we're off
another
topic
for another day, because I think this is going to be a hot one somehow. But
right. Patrick Brown is kind of on a charm offensive. He's done a 2-part global interview.
So charming.
He did an interview in, I think it was the National Post.
He was on Global. Yeah. He did a sit down with Global. Obviously not going to sit down with CTV because he hates them.
They're out to get him.
They're out to get him.
Part of an establishment conspiracy.
CTV completely stands by the story. He was drawing some links. He said one of the accusers knows somebody at CTV. Again, he has nothing to back this up, I don't think. He was just sort of drawing some conclusions.
I mean, that's been a... I saw one article about that one of the people who worked on the story was quote-unquote friends with someone, with one of the accusers. And Frank Magazine, I believe...
Oh.
Dug up that they were. I don't want to say because it's like almost like I don't want to repeat what they said because they've since taken that back.
Yeah,
but that they're basically friends from when they both worked at the Hill Times, and the Hill Times I think has stated that they were really just co-workers. They were there at the same time. They don't know anything about any kind of personal relationship between the two of them. And beside the point, the lead reporter on it was Glenn McGregor, and he's the one who did the interview. And Glenn McGregor isn't someone that has to, you know, kind of go low for scoops.
No.
He's like a well-established journalist with a litany of accomplishments up to and including the robocall story.
Yeah.
So he's not someone who has to, like, fake it to make it.
And CTV are high enough rollers that they're going to get their lawyers to pick this apart completely because it is such a massive story. I mean, they do that with the non-massive story as well. But, I mean, anything such as this, and considering the seriousness of the allegations, does not go to air lightly. You can guarantee that.
Mm-hmm.
And even though we don't have lawyers, I mean, we do the same, sort of do the same thing, a self-editing process, but it's something in journalism that happens all the time. Well, I was going to say, was it Breitbart that came out with this? I don't know.
but, no, I don't remember who it was. I mean, it was like this small website. It was like a no-name website. And then Frank Magazine picked up some of the details. But I mean,
and I almost consider Frank Magazine somewhat reputable. I know that sounds weird, but it's like there's lots of stuff that Frank Magazine has talked about that has come true. So,
but on top of it all is I think that I don't know if Patrick Brown is under the opinion that the fact that there's like mud in the water is going to be able to. I don't know, maybe restore him to the leadership of the party in some way, or if it's going to be able to save him, he's going to stay in caucus. But the fact of the matter is that these allegations were not in a void, because what happened immediately afterwards, his entire staff quit on him. And there were a lot of people talking about, like, the, you know, in the quote unquote whisper network, a lot of people were saying like, oh yeah, this is not surprising at all. I'm surprised it took this long to come out. You know, all these people who were quote unquote in the know knew there was something to this, and no one's gonna put their necks out like that based on two random allegations that they know might not be true unless there was something behind it. So. I've been kind of disturbed at the reaction that a lot of people are like, oh, it's a lie, it's a liar, people making it up, establishment, well, conspiracy.
Yeah, he says it's a lie. But I mean,
but there are, he does have his supporters. There are people who are seeing conspiracies in their soup on this.
And regardless of how anyone feels on this, not politically survivable. It is not possible. I mean, he would not. It's funny. The recent poll, I guess it was Campaign Research, said, you know, they placed all, at that point, it was three of the leaders. I don't know about the fourth one. I doubt it very much. That I think the numbers would be different. If you took any of the three, let's say the top three running for the job, top three out of four, and put them as the leader of the PC party, polls suggest that all three of them would win a majority to varying degrees, including Doug Ford. Mm-hmm. So that's how, at least with this particular poll, how far ahead they see the Conservatives. Even with the scandal and even with everything that's gone on, you can sub in any of the three main contenders, we'll call them, and the Conservatives would possibly win a majority. Now, we know polling, it's people with landlines and older, probably. But polls are polls, and it's something to pay attention to. And they called it Shriner's Greens. Shriner's Greens are 7%. So, which is healthy. That's good for the Greens. But right. I didn't see anything else. It just said Shriner's Greens. It sounds like went to Shriner's Green and had a picnic kind of thing. But yeah,
it's like, so, it's a vegetable
which
company.
Which is good for the Greens. But and the liberals and the New Democrats are just like, whatever.
Right, and we have to keep in mind that the piece that Tim Hudak was out in front before the 2011 election, before the 2014 election, and then, you know, the curse kicked in, the curse of the Bambino art or whatever was going on there. But
it's just like, we're going to fire 100,000 people. probably not.
Well, then he tried to do like a press availability in like a subway station or some kind of media event or stunt or something, and that didn't work out. It was just
your ward news
for like there. Yeah, the first week of the campaign, he could literally do nothing right. So I mean, we gotta wait for the campaign to see how it else is going to shake out.
Sure,
but for Patrick Brown, in the meantime, I think what's concerning is that he thinks there's potential for the comeback rehab.
Kid. Oh well,
and that there are people out there who are saying, like, I saw somebody on Twitter like today, like CTV fake news, and it's like, no, it's not fake news, and you have a lot of people pointing out, like, this is a repeat of Gomeshi. This is Gomeshi too, where people go through trauma. They're, you know, human memory is not infallible on the best of times. And, you know, you have people dumping on because people suddenly remember a detail that wasn't there before because of trauma. And we were supposed to be moving in a direction after Gomeshi that said we're going to be more understanding to victims. And that seems to have gone out the window.
Yeah, and he's saying, if this happened, then charge me, take me to court or whatever. But and then Christine Elliott was like, well, if he can clear his name, he can run. But that will never happen within the range of time that we're talking about. So he's done. He's done.
Well, the allegations stand because the people who are making the allegations haven't retracted that at all. The one
and maybe they're going to be like, well, maybe we will take you to court. We haven't heard anything one way or the other yet, but you never know.
Right, and we
not that you have,
and we don't
to
know if anyone else is going
to
come out because, I mean, there was that whole whole whisper gallery thing.
Oh, we all knew. Everybody knew,
and
people are saying that.
Right, I can't remember where else I was going with that. Let's go.
Anyway, there will be more on the PC leadership campaign.
I'm sure we'll get another opportunity to speak absolutely. About this. Anyway, last week, 11 members from the UK Parliament went to Washington and had a face-off with the exec teams of Facebook, Twitter, Google, and their varying subsidiaries to talk about fake news and social media. And it seems that people in the UK are much more concerned about this than the American politicians. And because they certainly were some harsh words, including Julian Knight, who said, "Why has your self-regulation so demonstrably failed, and how many chances do you need?" Which is, you know, if there's like an oh snap
It's just a certain UK way of putting things that's like,
well, that's
I'm
like
terribly frustrated. It's like, yes.
That's like, I mean, that's question period. And yeah. I think that's one of the things that Americans can't handle is like having your face rubbed in partisanship and direct questioning. And I don't think the social media people acquitted themselves fairly well because they don't have any real answers. And I think they want to coast on hopefully this never happening again, although, you know, we had the heads of the intelligence agencies in Congress this week saying, oh, no, this is definitely going to happen again. But I think that the heads of all these companies are looking at Trump and looking at someone who, you know, the first last person who doesn't believe anything went wrong and will refuse to do anything about it, that him being there allows them to coast and not have to really address it and not have to be terribly concerned about repercussions. Because if, let's say, Congress wanted to pass a law to regulate social media companies in the same way that TV and radio is regulated, then that bill lands on Trump's desk and he's going to sign a piece of legislation that acknowledges that the Russia thing happened, if that legislation is formed on the basis of that.
Yeah, so to take them to task on this, then they pretty much have to admit that there was Russian influence in the U.S. election. And it's pointing to that this did happen. So, you know, the U.K. does it Westminster style, which we have adopted, and it's a little different than American style, whereas we have an inquiry. We'll have an inquiry. So the inquiry is Russian interference in the EU referendum, right? The headline this week was, social media companies should notify UK voters who have been duped by fake news, who may have been duped by fake news. Like, can you imagine that? It's like, Facebook's like, oh, by the way, you know that thing that well, it's, you know, it's
fake. Exactly. This is Facebook. You have been submitted by fake news.
Your fake news will be trashed in a folder. Yeah, I don't know. But what's interesting with this, in doing the research for this, a lot of fake news came up.
How ironic.
Two of the companies that are being implicated, which are Kremlin-backed, are Russia Today and Sputnik. And if you Google anything to do with this story, like UK MP, social media interference, Russia, the Brexit, immediately stuff will come up from either one of those. One I saw from Russia Today was pro-EU PR firm self-funds questionable research to blame Russia for Brexit. I mean, that's the second story after this one that was on The Guardian about, you know, the UK MPs are hoping that...
And that comes directly out of the line of questioning.
Yeah.
Where,
this is from Google.
They wanted to... Yeah, they were trying to get at how much did Facebook and Twitter miss in terms of outside interference, foreign actors posting ads to during Brexit, which, of course, is illegal in the UK. Illegal for foreign actors to buy ads concerning UK elections and referendum.
And Facebook's like, well, we found a few things. And Twitter's like, well, we found a few more things. But well, they're not taking into account, there's supposedly something like they've concluded 150,000 Twitter accounts with Russia ties.
Yeah.
And also not included is like the whole like pages and other people's accounts, like somebody's page that might be bashing the Brexit world, because anybody can do it, right? You can do it from here. It's like, oh. But this effort is when you've got money and backing, allegedly, it's, you know, you can just broadcast your message. So they're trying to do some digging to see, well, actually, what is this? I didn't really find out too much about 89UP, but that's the PR firm that Russia Today was talking about. It's like, yeah, no, they're private. And supposedly, also according to them, funded by George Soros, who is Satan incarnate, right? Soros money.
He's the root of all evil.
So, and this is from the so-called news company, right? That's
right.
The foreign oligarch is payrolling, you know, is bankrolling this whole thing. It's like,
And then you have, like, on the flip side, you have Canada here, which is, you know, the government of Canada is working with Facebook to sort of try and create some transparency that Facebook is looking to implement other places. That ProPublica actually kind of did a investigation of that to see if the enhanced security is working. And they noted that it's kind of an improvement, but it's still hard to find and information in terms of whether an ad is legitimate. You know, there's an added security measure that you can't post an ad on Facebook now unless you your company is on Facebook.
Oh.
But there is an area where you can look at like ads. You can look at the ads. Of course, there are algorithms for the ads that, like, if I want to post an ad about something that's happening in Guelph, a Facebook algorithm will target people who are in Guelph or around Guelph. But what Facebook has added is an additional security site where if you are not in Guelph, you can look at my ad if you want. But you have to find the ad, first of all, and that's what's difficult. You have to find this ad section. And there doesn't seem to be great archiving either. That is only there for a little while, so you can't really go back in time to see what all has been posted in the past. So there's still huge holes to fill in terms of what they're doing, and it seems like a slap and a promise on the part of Facebook. It seems like little things that they're doing that they can go back to, you know, Congress and say, look, we're trying stuff as a way to stave off the voices that will probably inevitably get louder, that there probably needs to be some sort of regulation of social media.
Yeah, I mean, and this is the thing, of course, with social media, that exists sort of outside of the borders. There's this, you know, it's
right.
It's not impossible to control, because Facebook, you know, they could control it, Twitter, YouTube, you name it. But they're all just doing, it sounds like they're doing a bit of a shrug, like, well, you know, we found a couple of things, but, you know, this, it's not going to, what can we do? And throw your arms up in the air. But, yeah, and I suppose Google as well, too, in terms of what their search engines are channeled to with the keywords. It's like I said earlier. But as this committee is going to roll on, I guess, there's actually two. There's one, the Electoral Commission Committee. And what Damian Collins, the name keeps coming up. And I don't know if it was Sputnik or RT or one of those, doing a bit of a smear job on him as well. He's the head of the Commons, Culture, Media, and Sport Committee. Also looking at this, that's an interesting combination, culture, media, and sport.
It's like all the leftover stuff.
Yeah, it's like, okay, you get this. That's like the thick of it, right? It's like the portfolio that's like, I don't know. But yeah, there's a couple of things. If you were searching and put Damian Collins' name in, chair of this committee, is there's a bit of a smear on him as well. So there is, you can see it. If you're looking for it, you can see it. And I think this is the problem, is people just get whatever in their feeds and kind of shrug it off and say, oh yeah, you know, Brexit probably is really good. If you're teetering on the brink of like, oh, you know, I think we should stay. No, you should go for these reasons. So, as we know from the referendum, the percentages weren't that high. So, and I think that's, you know, if it was a resounding one way or the other, maybe we wouldn't be having this conversation and they wouldn't be having this conversation. But if it was, you know, the fact that it was close and the fact that it might run again, which seems to surface every couple of weeks, is like, well, you know, we probably should run it again just to make sure. So an evolving story. And, you know, I was going to say, keep listening to us, because this is the most non-fakest news. Is that even a word? I don't know.
Non-fakest?
Non-fakest?
The
unfakingest.
Sure. Why not?
Truthiest. Yeah, I don't
truthiest.
Know.
Truthiest. There we go. Nailed it.
It's been a long day.
It's been a long day. Let's wrap up.
We're going to draw to a close
now.
Let's
go home.
Yes.
Let's just get, yeah.
It's the heat. It's the searing heat.
Let's give up.
Yeah. we can't give up, man. We've invested too
much. We're so close. We're so close to the end, folks.
The breakthrough.
Well, we'll see where we go next week. You can stay connected to us at opensourcesguelph.com, Open Sources Newswire on Facebook, @OS_Guelph on Twitter, and you can listen to this and past episodes on the Guelph Politicast channel on Podbean or through iTunes, Stitcher, and Google Play. You can stay connected to me on Twitter @AdamADonaldson or go to guelphpolitico.blogspot.ca.
Scotty Hertz on Facebook, Scotty Hertz on Twitter, and I blog at a spot called spannerbook.wordpress.com, spannerbook. And all wrench, all truth. I don't know.
Odd emphasis on the spanner. Okay. DJ Sounds Good to Me is here at the top of the hour on CFRU 93.3 FM, CFRU.ca, Guelph Campus and Community Radio. And Open Sources will be back with you next Thursday at 5 p.m., and we will see you then.